I'm bringing Jody down a little bit. Sorry for the technical difficulties in the show today. I'm mortified, seriously, out there. But thank you guys for tuning in and for encouraging me and for keeping on with the Arts Report. My name is Tracy Fuller, CITR 101.9 FM. Join me again next Wednesday at 5 o'clock for Everything Artsy in Vancouver.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 audio text.
From Inventory by Dion Brand. We believed in nothing. The black and white American movies buried themselves in our chests. Glacial, liquid, acidic as love. The way to Wyoming, the sunset in Cheyenne. The surreptitious cook fires, the uneasy sleep of cowboys, the cactus, the tumbleweed, the blankets, the homicides of Indians, lit, dimmed, lit in the drawing rooms, the suicides inside us, and the light turnings to stone, inside and out. We arrived spectacular, tendering our own bodies into dreamery, as meat, as mask, as burden. Like chaos, all the fake feelings we had, oh, love. The acts of ventriloquism, the wooded arteries, the arms clattering to the floor. The big raw cities flailing us. We returned home dead on our feet and melancholy. The earth was never the earth. We were never anyone. Everything we were preceded us, foolish in the heady days when we thought we might, somehow, within a few seasons after their laughter and rocket whistles. But this was their manifesto, and we took it like fun. The burnt kernels, the chemical sugars. Their love.
We'll be right back.
Good evening. You're listening to Audio Text on CITR.ca. Mercury must be in retrograde. We're having some technical difficulties as well. So you're listening to the show on Canadian writing, the poetry show, the literature show, whatever you want to call it. We have a very exciting show put together for you. Just at the beginning of our half hour, I was reading an excerpt from Dion Brand's Inventory. It is Black History Month this month, so I'm making an effort to make sure that all of the Canadian poets that I feature on the show are Black Canadians. Dion Brand's an amazing poet. If you could hear it in that one little excerpt, then you already know what I'm talking about, but I'll be coming back to her a little bit later and talking a bit about that collection. But before that, we're going to venture into the realm of storytelling for a little bit. I have an interview with Naomi Steinberg, who is a storyteller right here in Vancouver. You may have heard of her before or heard her tell stories before. And after that interview, we're going to play for you a very short story that she told recently at a reading event at Raw Canvas. So coming right up is that interview, especially to speak about this weekend's upcoming Vancouver International Storytelling Festival. So hear what Naomi has to say about that. The Vancouver Story Slam used to be, appropriately enough, and I'm talking with Naomi Steinberg, who is a storyteller here in Vancouver. So thanks for talking to CITR today, first of all, Naomi.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So let's just talk a bit about storytelling. How did you become a storyteller? What does that mean to you?
My most favorite and pat answer to that is I got into storytelling through story listening. I was introduced to the Vancouver Society of Storytelling through a monthly story swap called Crick Crack, which is an event that happens the third Sunday of every month here in Vancouver. And probably about 10 or 11 years ago, I started to go monthly and completely fell in love with the form. I was the youngest person there, felt completely welcomed. And after a number of years of listening, I decided to try telling. I thought maybe it was time to give back a little bit. And that also felt really great, and I was well received. And from that point on, the universe opened, I guess. Yeah.
So then has storytelling always been a verbal thing for you, or how does that sort of translate into writing stories down?
Well, when my parents first got a computer, I remember writing a story called Kazma, which was all about a journey to a distant planet called Kazma and this person's survival and exploration. So I do know that before that, I was always making stories in my head. I didn't have a television growing up, and I was a bit of a lone wolf and really enjoyed my time always building stories. And I remember that there was always themes to my stories, and I would always come back to those same themes and build further. And I think I've always been a storyteller. It has definitely been more oral for me, but there is for sure writing that comes.
And so what are some of those themes? Like, what do you write stories about?
Well, I tend to work with traditional folk and fairy tales, and the stories that, the themes that seem to come out, there's a lot of wisdom tales, there's a lot of, these days what I've noticed in my stories is a lot of women standing up and saying things like, enough is enough, let's get it together, let's have some fun, let's draw a line, let's stop the war, let's, you know, like I was recently down in California telling book 21 of the Odyssey. There was probably about 15 storytellers who got together to tell the entire Odyssey over the course of a day. And I was given book 21, which is the book where Penelope says, enough is enough. You young men who have been living on my property for X number of years while Odysseus is away at war, eating all of the food, killing all the sheep, and making a mess of my home, enough is enough. And she gets up and goes and gets Odysseus's great bow and challenges the suitors and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that moment for me where Penelope got up, inspired by Athena, the goddess of wisdom, but that moment where she got up and said, basta, enough, is a theme that seems to have been coming up a lot. So when you're putting together these stories, how does it happen for you? Do they kind of appear in your head? Do you do research? What's your process like? Well, because I work with traditional folk and fairy tales, they don't just appear in my head. I will tend to either pull from my existing repertoire or look for a new story based on the context of the particular place that I've been asked to tell a story. Sometimes I don't know what story I'm going to tell until I'm actually at the venue, up on stage, with a microphone in hand, which is a frightening moment. I know there's the storytelling festival coming up. That's actually what we're here to talk about, is the upcoming storytelling festival. And I'm sharing a bill with a woman named Janet Blake, who comes from the UK. And she's internationally renowned, and everybody I've talked to who knows the name Janet Blake is amazed and grateful that she's coming to town. So I'm really excited to work with her. And so we shared a few emails just trying to decide, well, we have this hour and a half, what are we going to do? And Janet wrote and said, I don't necessarily know what I'm going to do until I see the whites of their eyes. And I wrote back to her and I said, that's fantastic. I fully understand, and I hope one day to have that much trust. I'm going in that direction for sure, but boy, oh boy, I do not have enough experience to fully let go into that amount of trust. To answer your question, though, once I actually know, you know, if I'm prepping a new story, so I've done my research, I've either decided that I want to work with a story that I've heard somebody tell or that I found in a book, I've discovered the fairy tale that I want to work with or the folk tale that I want to work with. And that is a mysterious process. I don't know. That's like, it will jump out at you. Or a photocopy. I had a stack of photocopies yesterday that I was looking through, folk tales that I was looking through, and one from that stack fell out, and I put it aside. And often it's like that. You know, it's like, it will come knocking. Why did that story choose me? The stem sentence, this story chose me, can be very beneficial. And just to do 5 minutes of writing on that, that's something that I like to do. It satisfies some curiosity. And then from there, I'll start to find the ground of the story. What culture did it come from? What's the landscape of the story? Who's there at the beginning of the story? So I really just get rooted and grounded in the quote-unquote facts. In this landscape, which is informed by the source culture, what happened? Okay, so there was a princess. Or there was a king and a queen who had no children. And every day they would wake up and they would pray. And one day, after thousands of prayers, they were granted a child. And she was more beautiful than the moon. And so they named her Situkan. Great, so what a fantastic beginning. Then what happened? So you do this whole like chain of events, and this happened and that happened and on and on and on. And then once you got a good, or once I have a good sense of that, then I start to look at, and then I really go off. I'm like, well, what would it have felt like? And I start to do like all this like mining of like emotion and psychology and I don't know what. And sometimes I'll like end up crying and I'll be like, well, that's a pretty heavy story. Or I'll be like, oh, that's hilarious. And then for the actual telling of it, let it all go and just tell the story. I don't try to make meaning or like say, well, you know, for sure she was really sad or it was horrible or any of that. Just like, just tell the story and people will hear and feel whatever's going on for them, because the listeners having the stories is living the story also. So it's not for me to impose my understanding.
Great. So in an excellent segue, you mentioned the upcoming Vancouver International Storytelling Festival. So let's talk about that for a minute. What's the deal with that?
The deal with that is that it's the 17th International Vancouver Storytelling Festival, which is pretty amazing if you think about that. And it's hosted by the Vancouver Society of Storytelling. And And for this year, the title is In the Beginning. And there's storytellers coming. Well, most of the storytellers are local. There's some folks coming from the Yukon, from the UK. And the brass tacks of it is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, this upcoming weekend, 6th, 7th, and 8th, at the Heritage Hall on Main Street. And I don't know what to say. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm so stoked. I think that there's been particular care given this year to making the festival really relevant. The Storytelling Society has been holding space for, it's been holding space for those traditional stories and for that old way of, if you want to listen to the story, you can close your eyes. Maybe you'll see it better. I'm a huge fan of collaborations. I do big productions with video and shadow puppetry and clown work, and I love it. I love it. I love Story Slam. I think it's an incredible discipline. And there's something so powerful about listening to a story well told, full of heart, and full of the depth which comes from generations holding that story and handing it down and handing it down and handing it down. I was saying to you earlier in our little pre-interview about Keseke, my friend from the Ivory Coast, and how he wants to share with me stories that he learned at his grandmother's knee. And that's no joke. That's the village in Ivory Coast. That's the history of that village, wrapped up in a folktale, wrapped up in a fairy tale, delivered straight from mouth to ear. It may be full of delight and laughter and hard times and good times, just like life. That's how potent stories are. And so that there is a space for that is, for me, deeply important. And so the Storytelling Society has been doing that. And this festival is like the cake. Comes once a year. And these people who are coming are internationally renowned. You know, and there's full spectrum going to be represented as well. There's personal stories. I know there's a fellow named Wing Su Wong who's closing out Sunday night, and he's going to be telling the story of his near-death experience. And then there's Janet Blake, who's going to be telling Jamaican riddle stories. Even that she's from the UK, her heritage is from Jamaica. And I know Sunday morning, Kira Van Dusen is going to be telling Gesar of Ling. Well, she's not going to be telling all of Gesar, because that's an epic from Tibet, which would potentially take lifetimes to tell. So she's going to be telling a few short. I think she's got an hour or maybe even 2 hours to tell extracts, excerpts from that long epic story. There's a panel discussion on contemporary myth and the storyteller's responsibility. So myth-making, the creation of our reality, profoundly the creation of our reality, because we all know that stories are creating our reality. Media is doing it. Advertising agencies are doing it. Fundamentally, myth is where the stars and the moon come from. Again, referring to the title of the festival, In the Beginning. So there's actually a panel discussion on the relevance of contemporary myth and our responsibility as storytellers to step up to the plate and perhaps to have the courage to say, in certain domains, enough is enough. You know, enough is enough with our dependency on fossil fuels. And can we get over that already and maybe dig up, you know, half of the side streets and put in some gardens? That's my own personal diatribe, which you can cut out. But you know, that's, we can each choose to do that and do that with great joy and pleasure and fun and deliciousness and delight. So I know Friday night is billed as traditional stories, and Sunday night is billed as non-traditional stories. And yet, even within the traditional story Friday night, which I happen to be hosting, I know on Friday night also there's going to be Ivan Penaluna, who is the 2008 Story Slam champion. So we also have representation from that end of the spectrum, or that aspect or part of the spectrum. And I mean, how fantastic. How fantastic that there's this rich banquet to choose from. Go to all of it. Buy a weekend pass, $55. Amazing. Bring your whole family for $100. Whole family. Whole weekend. Stories.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing all that with us today, Naomi.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to chew off your ear about what I'm so passionate about.
Every Monday and Friday, something extraordinary goes on at CITR. It's the scramble to put together a news show that offers an alternate view of the headlines. News 101 brings you the latest in news from around campus and the world. So if you're tired of the same old take on the world around you, listen to News 101. That's every Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. on CITR.
So you were just listening to an interview with Naomi Steinberg, the storyteller from Vancouver, and she was talking about the cake, the delicious, passionate wonder of telling stories and listening to stories. So I do recommend that you all go and check out the Vancouver International Storytelling Festival this weekend. There's a lot going on. You can get a few more details at vancouverstorytellingfestival.org on the web, or if you want to get some slightly more up-to-date information about it, it might be helpful if you're on Facebook to go to Naomi's Facebook group, which is Naomi-Eliana. E-L-I-A-N-A. So you can get information about that there, and you can also get information about the lovely Naomi. And if you want to hear a little bit more from her, we have a very short story from her feature at Raw Canvas a little while ago, and that's coming up right away. Speaking of Mercury retrograde, we've somehow lost that story. Sadly, technical difficulties happen on live radio all the time. So we might be able to find that again, but while we're taking a look, I'm going to read some poetry for you. So the poet I chose today is Dionne Brand. She's a poet and novelist who lives in Toronto. She's done a ton of work, really, really good stuff. She's won the Governor General's Award for Poetry and the Trillium Book Award for 1997. One of my favorite novels, What We All Long For, is also authored by her. She's one of those poets that translates quite well into being a novelist. It doesn't always work that well, but in her case, it's really wonderful. And so this selection, Inventory, which is published by McClelland and Stewart, is sort of a meditation on what it would look like if we did an inventory of the world up to this point, up to sort of this century. What if we take a look back and see what we've got at the end of everything? And so it's a long poem, and it's a beautiful long poem, and I do recommend that you go and grab it and check it out and read as much as you can, because I can only read you an excerpt, but I'm going to read you right from the middle of that. You can get a sense of it. And so that this is from Inventory by Dionne Brand. 1 year, she sat at the television weeping. No reason, the whole time, and the next, the war's last and late night witness. Some, she concluded, are striving on grief and burnt clothing, bloody rags, bomb-filled shoes. The pitiful domestic blankets in the hospitals, the bundles of plump corpses waiting or embraced by screams, the leaking chests and ridiculous legs. The abrupt density of life gone out, the manifold substances of stillness. Nothing personal is recorded here, you must know that, but 1 year the viciousness got to be too much. The news was advertisement for movies. The movies were the real killings. The baked, precipitous ditches, twisted metal hulks of things that used to be, fires as intense as black holes, voids in schoolyards and hotels, in kitchens and prophetic boys. All this became ordinary, far from where it happened. The Arab faces were Arab faces after all. Not even the Western hostages were hostages. The lives of movie stars were more lamentable, and the wreckage of streets was unimportant. What confidences would she tell you then? What would possibly be safe in your hands? But never mind that. Here is the latest watchful hour. 27 in Hilla, 3 in fighting in Amaria, 2 by roadside bombing, Adaim, 5 by mortars in Afar and firefight in Samara. 2 in collision near Kallus, council member in Kirkuk, 1 near medical complex, 2 in Talafar, 5 by suicide bomb in Kirkuk, 5 by suicide in Shorgat, 1 in attack on police chief Behurs, 5 by car bomb in Bakuba, policeman in Mosul, 2 by car bomb Medayan, 5 by mortars in Talafar, Sufi follower near Baghdad, 12 by suicide bomb in restaurant, bystander in Dora in Shada in Hala, 27 again, 27. She's heard clearly now, 23, by restaurant bomb near Green Zone, Ibn Zambur, and so clear, syntonic, 1, threading a needle, 3, beating dust from slippers. Anyone looking for a newspaper, an idea in their head like figs will soon be in season, 4, playing dominoes, drinking Turkish coffee, 7, by shop window with small girl in waiting pool, 12, half naked by river, 9, shot dead in Missouri shopping mall, possible, yes, in restaurant in Madison, 3 nephews, 1 aunt in Nashville, firebomb, 6 by attack near hospital in Buffalo, 2 listening to radio, 16 by bomb at football stadium, 1 reading on bus. The heart is enclosed in a pericardial sac that is lined with the parietal layers of serous membrane. 3 with the electricity gone since Thursday, still fumbling for candles, then finding the matches. At least someone should stay awake, she thinks. Someone should dream them along the abysmal roads. 23 by suicide bomb at Ibn Zambur kebab restaurant. No need to repeat this, really. Just the name of the kebab place is new, isn't it? Enough numbers still to come, so 20 outside bank in Kirkuk, the numbers so random, so shapeless, apart from their shape, their seduction of infinity, the ganglia and meninges, the gray matter of the cerebrum, the viscous peritoneal cavity. Did she say too, listening to the radio, to Nancy Amrique, perhaps, any preferring by sleep, by magic and hallucinations? But here it is in rush hour, in traffic, a queue near the scarf seller, in a moment's inattention, injured by petals of nails and hot wire, fugitive valves, a rain of small, glittering teeth. And bones, beatific, sharpened with heat, at least it was sudden, if not predictable at any rate, not on Sunset Boulevard, Potsdam Strasse, Oxford Circus, Rue de Faubourg, Saint-Honoré, and all those streets of reasonable suspicion, of self-fulfilling dread, charred by home improvements, self-makeovers, what goes for conscience now. What foundations, what animus calms, we're doing the best we can with these people. What undeniable hatred fuels them, what else can we do? Nothing but maim them. We do not deserve it, it's out of the blue. The sleeplessness at borders, the poor sunlight, the paralyzed cars, they hate our freedom, they want the abominable food from our mouths. It is worse during the night when the bombardment is most intense. Look, where there are matches. No, don't light a fire, the tap's dripping precious, the electricity will soon come back. How far away it is now, the phosphorescent bodies, the tremulous, wounded hallways. She has to keep watch at the window of the television. She hears what is never shown. The details are triumphant. She'll never be able to write them in time. The paper now, and where's the hair oil? The butter's gone rancid. Remember that cat we used to have? It disappeared the first day. Lemons. Remember to buy lemons. There's another life. She listens each hour, each night, behind the flat screen and the news anchor. The sleek, speeding cars, the burgers, the breaking celebrity news, unrealities of faraway islands, bickering and spiteful, each minute so drastic they win $1 million, the waiting, she can't bear the waiting, the metal of waiting, she sits devoted, the paring knife close to a harvest of veins. Now everything is in her like ends and tastes, the loosening clasp of affinities. Everyone grows perversely accustomed. She refuses. When you come through, we'll listen to Coltrane's Stellar Regions, to water, to rain again, anywhere, and to Betty Carter, to caterpillars gnawing at leaves, to Gyra cooking in oil, to all the songs I love and have forgotten, like Smokey Robinson's Ooh Baby Baby and Roaring Lion's Caroline. We'll just listen. The ear is so valuable. It is like sleep. To Dina Washington and Leonard Cohen, to Firouz, to yawning, and to one bee eating fruit. What time do you like best? Whenever, the best thing then is the Atlantic. Wherever you find it, then you don't need music. It is the beginning of music. Cecil Taylor knows this, and Kathleen Battle, and Fateh Ali Khan, and Abdullah Ibrahim. Then just watching that ocean evens out the world. All I can offer you now, though, is my brooding hand, my sodden eyelashes and the like. These humble and particular things I know, my eyes pinned to your face, understand. I will keep you alive like this. The desolate air between us is no match for the brittle orchids we are destined to eat together, the ashen tulips we will devour voraciously. Take this letter, put it on your tongue, sleep while I keep watch. Know that I am your spy here, your terrorist. Find me. So that was just an excerpt from Dion Brand's long poem, Inventory, published by McClelland and Stewart. I hope that you enjoyed listening to that sort of meditation on what's been going on over the past few years and in our world, our world as a whole, and how difficult it can be to kind of take stock of that and be able to listen to the radio and hear the news and then remember that you need to buy lemons and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of an interesting thing that happens when you find yourself a citizen of the world, when all these things are going around you that you don't actually have any control over or any immediate sort of interaction with. So just a beautiful and quite difficult poem. I strongly recommend it. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed reading it. Just before we get going, so you all know, I would love to get your feedback. I would love to know if there's anything you want to hear me read or if you want to come on the show and hear something specific, whatever it is, please do go ahead and email us at audiotextcitr@gmail.com.
The UBC School of Music has jazz, opera, choirs, symphonies, and more. Visit www.music.ubc.ca for listings of free and nearly free musical elixirs to keep you warm all winter long.